The final topic of the think tank was the WINS trial of adjuvant dietary fat reduction, an update of which was presented at San Antonio by Dr. Shablowski. 8 of the faculty indicated that they now routinely counsel patients that reducing dietary fat may decrease the cancer relapse rate, and Dr. Kathy Pritchard began the discussion.
I just think that this is off everybody's radar. You know, we're medical oncologists, and I think we give drugs and we give cytotoxic drugs and we know how to give hormones. But another example of a set of drugs that were around and have had very interesting data about them for 18 years, about 10 of which nobody paid any attention to them, were the bisphosphonates. There were case reports that showed that you could heal a lytic lesion in breast cancer by giving a bisphosphonate. It's pretty hard to do that with anti-tumor therapy. And yet nobody was really interested in the bisphosphonates for a long, long time. And I think it's just an example of an area that doesn't transect with our pre-biases.
Eric?
So there's nothing wrong with it. It desperately needs to be studied further. I mean, as Rowan knows, because I was very happy to be discussing it at ASCO when he presented this, and I thought it was great at the time. These are very interesting data. In fairness, if this were a drug, it wouldn't be approved by the FDA based on one study and particularly a subset analysis that wasn't prospectively planned.
But there'd be another big study going on right now.
But the company would have been all over this and would be running a big study and would be having advisory boards and everything else. So this calls for more work. I mean, I think the other issue is that, and I think Rowan can speak to this far better than any of the rest of us, this isn't a matter of just telling your patient, hey, don't eat that McDonald's burger tomorrow. I mean, the intervention that they pursued in this study was an intervention that took planning and effort and funding. And if, in fact, we're going to do this in our practices, it's going to require a fair amount of effort. But I think you need more research. Can I ask you just one question?
Sure.
Which is, has anyone gone and looked at the issue as to whether women who gain weight and are thought to have a worse prognosis, whether there is a differential effect in women with ER negative and ER positive disease? The reverse of this? And I realize that this isn't just about weight loss, that this is a specific weight.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a few studies, but of course you have a small number of people in most of those studies. So that really hasn't been looked at with power.
I don't think that data is available. Now, the person who might know that for sure would be Pam Goodwin, but I
remember looking at those data sets, but I don't remember being struck by that it being a differential effect.
But Ron, sorry, just to summarize for all of us, it's receptor-negative breast cancer that seems to be affected more than receptor-positive?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And contralateral, consistently not.
Well,
a new primary in the WHO.
My explanation to that is you got a small number, and most of the cancers, because most of the primary cancers are receptor positive, so that you're almost totally powerless to look at an effect on receptor negative cancers in the contralateral situation. In the Women's Health Initiative, we're seeing when you have more events, we've got 1,700 events, we're going to have 2,500 events next March. We're seeing this suggestion that it may also be receptor negative cancers.
So there's quite a bit of lifestyle data in the background here about sleep, about dark and light sleep, about weight gain up and down, and activity, exercise up and down, and now dietary fat, etc. What do you tell patients, and what studies are critical to do?
Well, one study that we're both involved with, which is starting, which is this LISA study, which is going to be postmenopausal resected breast cancer patients, interestingly receptor positive, but they're going to add a caloric intake target and increased physical activity, interestingly going to be done centrally by dietitians and exercise physiologists in a bilingual in a secret bunker someplace in Toronto calling people all throughout Canada. And I think that's very exciting because if that intervention works, that would mean that we'd get around the objection of oncologists will say, you know, I don't have time to do this. I don't know how to do it. Like I say, well, you don't know how to give radiation therapy either. You don't go down there and turn on the machine. You know, you just, so if this intervention works, then we will be in a position to be able to say, just call this number and maybe have your credit card ready. So that's very interesting. I think there's more interest in this now, especially the diabetes prevention trial, where it showed that this 5% weight loss difference was enough to prevent the onset of diabetes, clinical diabetes. So you really end up having, that was that first signal that you could prevent a chronic disease with a lifestyle intervention, randomized trial, New England Journal. So I think there's more interest in this, and we'll see. I mean, there is interest at the NIH, again, maybe pursuing something else. I would really love to do a confirmatory story, a trial in receptor-negative cancer patients where the sample size could could be 1,200. And I think it would be relatively easy to do, especially if you could do a central mediated intervention. Central mediated interventions work for smoking cessation. That's been part of the approach in the well study. So it isn't like you don't have a background for doing that kind of intervention.
What about the biology of this? We have the big NCI preoperative conference coming up. Could this be looked at in a preoperative setting and get some clues about what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the signal is going to be, well, not estrogen, right? And if that's the case, then maybe insulin, IGF-1 inflammatory markers. And we just had this conversation, I guess, last night, where isn't there a lot of crosstalk between insulin, IGF-1, those pathways, and ER pathways? And my concept there is maybe if you're blocking the ER pathway with the hormonal therapy, with tamoxifen, then maybe blocking the insulin pathway doesn't matter so much. But if you're not blocking it in the receptor negative patients, then maybe that pathway plays a bigger role. So that's just speculation. We have 400 serial bloods annually in a number of patients. And then once we get to this final data analysis, then we'll begin to do some subgroups. We've only looked at these three subgroups, ER, body mass index, and nodal status. So the subgroup analysis in terms of did it work better in people who lost weight, did it work better in people who had high dietary fat intake at entry, then we should know later this year.
Rowan, do you think you could do this in a preoperative study? Could you learn anything?
I don't know. You tell me.
I don't know. I mean, it's actually come up at our place.
Insulin growth factor? Could you look in the tumor?
Yeah, if you felt it was mediated by insulin, IGF-1, or inflammatory markers, you could identify targets. And then the question is, would you have a rapid enough effect? And that's part of
the
question. And could you get a dietary change in such a short period of time? So
especially when you're waiting around to have surgery for breast cancer.
Ron, any chance that this altered something else that caused this reduction? I mean, like going back to the sleep data, that seems to be important.
Yeah.
Could something else have happened to them because they changed their diet? Maybe they exercised more?
Well, they didn't exercise more. I think one of the things is I'm excited about the dietary change because I know that there's probably going to be thousands of proteins that would be different in the blood when you have this change in diet. So you really have a lot of stuff moving around. The women were 58, the usual U.S. 58-year-old postmenopausal population. They were almost totally inactive. When we look at the activity in the bottom two quintiles, recreational physical activity was zero. So the fifth and the fourth quartile was zero. So you had to be carried to the target, you know, and back to your car. So
they don't go to the tennis court or anything?
No, no. So I think that's our impression of breast cancer patients. I mean, we heard that comment before, that they become inactive, less active. And so these were very similar in that regard. There wasn't any other lifestyle. And these patients didn't become lifestyle nuts and eating natural foods or anything. They just did what the dietitians told them because they wanted to please the dietitians.
John and then Matt.
We did a survey of women who had been through their breast cancer experience, and we subjected them to a VO2 max test. Lance Armstrong scores 74. You're on the cardiac transplant list at 12 if the problem is you're only moving 12 milliliters of oxygen per kilogram and it's your heart. We had patients coming in at 10. The mean was 18. These are incredibly deconditioned, and our age-matched controls should have been 28 to 30. So these women are in rough shape just from having the breast cancer experience, or perhaps it's one of the etiologic factors and you happen to pick up the couch potatoes as they come through the system.
So were these people, John, that had finished chemo or were in chemo?
The majority of them had never had chemo. In fact, they were just postmenopausal women on hormonal therapy.
But they were people who'd had a prior diagnosis of breast cancer sometime before.
Median of 1 year post-therapy.
Matt?
The question, obviously, is what's the biology? And I just wonder, Rowan, when you tease out the change in dietary fat, obviously you have vegetable fats and animal fats. And one would imagine that they reduce the amount of animal fat as a major way of reducing their fat intake. Is there a compensatory increase in vegetable fat, or is there any suggestion it could be actually the type of fat they're eating, a ratio of the two?
No, this is different than heart disease. Well, heart disease is working at 30, and so you'd say olive oil instead of trans fats. Here at 20, all the fats in the foods. They're not using any margarine or butter as an external spread. They're not using any oil-based salad dressings. So all categories of fat go down. PS ratio stays exactly the same. If you wanted to manipulate that, you'd have to change what people eat. You'd say, don't eat these categories of food, eat these categories of food. That's pretty akin that like 2% of the world's population can do because every meal, they're telling you what to eat. So it's no change in PS ratio. Everything goes down almost exactly the same.
And what's the caloric reduction?
Caloric reduction was very little. I mean, it was just like 70 kilocalories or something like that. And it just barely accounted for the weight loss.
So Rowan, if I told my patients, no butter, margarine,
nope.
no additional fat of any type, like no salads with olive oil or whatever, and skim milk, basically, as long as they're not eating high-fat meat, for example, they get close to 20%.
Well, they'd have to do a few more things. I mean, that's a good start. You'd have to change in breakfast. You wouldn't have sweet rolls in the morning. You'd have your cereal and skim milk, and there's your snacks would change from cheese and crackers and chips to popcorn. Meat sample portion size would have to be reduced. Cooking methods would be changed. Now they have a bunch of these sprays like PAM or whatever, the stuff that you spray in the pans. So you would need somebody to help you along to get there, because if you're going to do those things and pour in even olive oil as you're cooking, then it goes up. Right?
So just for the sake of the tape, because obviously this is a clinical practice thing, give me the top five things that you have to do to get to 20%.
Have a nice nutritionist who talks to you
regularly. I understand that.
But he wants top five.
Something the oncologist can say to get close to, you know.
So start with reducing dairy, and that would include reducing spreads. So no butter or margarine, anything on rolls. Eliminate oil-based salad dressings. Reduce meat portion size. Change your cooking approach. Change your snacks from things, again, related to dairy, cheese and crackers or chips, to something like popcorn. That will do it for most people. They will need encouragement to go along with that.
Final comment from Mark.
The South Beach Diet became a best-selling book, making millions for the publisher and author. I think we need to have the Wins Diet book by Iron Chef Chablowski to spread the word and spread the news about all this.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our speakers, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for this special Think Tank edition of Breast Cancer Update.